If you're gay, then you're gay. Don't pretend that you're straight. You could be who you are any day of the week. You are unlike the others, so strong and unique. We're all with you.
If you're straight, well, that's great. You can help procreate and make gay little babies for the whole human race. Make a world we can live in where the one who you love's not an issue.
Thanks for tuning in, and welcome to the May 25th, 2020 Shelter-in-Place edition of IMRU Radio Magazine. I'm Michael Taylor Gray. According to RuPaul, we're born naked and all the rest is drag. And every year since 2015, the folks at World of Wonder, producers of RuPaul's Drag Race, have held the insanely popular DragCon convention at the LA Convention Center. This year, the coronavirus loosened their tuck, so we'll travel back to a few drag cons past. We'll also revisit a conversation with an elderly drag star, a male impersonator, and take a seat for Drag Queen Story Hour. So Shantae, please stay, because this IMRU is dragalicious. But first, the honest tea. From NBC Out, NBCNews.com, Out Life and Style, Saturday, May 23rd, 2020, reported by Dan Allen. 15 queer art shows you can virtually tour now. This year was meant to be a phenomenal year for LGBTQ-themed art exhibitions around the world, until March and the coronavirus pandemic came along, shuttering museums and putting the planet on lockdown. Fortunately, several of the top LGBTQ art shows originally planned for physical reality right now can still be experienced virtually, as indeed can a number of excellent exhibitions by and about queer artists from years past. Several must-see galleries have also been created exclusively for virtual intake, focusing on the works of some of queer art's greatest icons. Just days before the pandemic temporarily shut down the Tate Britain and most of the world, the museum opened its first exhibition in nearly a century, dedicated to the work of influential late Victorian provocateur Aubrey Beardsley, an illustrator whose beautifully curved infused work focused on the decadent, the irreverent, the erotic, and the ethereal. Beardsley's sexuality is still debated, but he was a certified dandy and an avid Oscar Wilde collaborator, most notably and audaciously as the illustrator of the first edition of Salome, who got swept up in the scandal of Wilde's homosexuality trial in 1895. Though he died at just 25, Beardsley was extraordinarily prolific, as you can now see in a virtual video recap of the Tate exhibition, a collaboration with Paris's Musée d'Orsay by curators Caroline Corbeau-Parsons and Alice Inslee. And from the Columbus Museum of Art, Art After Stonewall, 1969 to 1989. This groundbreaking show, exploring the impact of the Stonewall Uprising on artists and their art, did enjoy its full opening run at New York's Leslie Lohman Museum last year, but was sadly interrupted just days after its March relocation to the Columbus Museum of Art, which had organized the exhibition in the first place. Fortunately for everyone in Columbus and beyond, the museum has since posted numerous videos highlighting various works from the show, as well as a virtual exhibition. Frida Kahlo art lovers have a reason to rejoice. In conjunction with 33 museums around the world, Google Arts and Culture has amassed a truly astounding virtual collection of all things Frida, including numerous exhibits of her powerful works, more than 200 pieces in all. Still more exhibits about her fascinating life, virtual tours of her Blue House in Mexico City, and copious feature articles, including one that explores her profound and enduring influence on global LGBTQ artists. From LGBTQNation.com, Friday, May 22nd, 2020, reported by Bill Browning. That time, a woman's brilliant response to their anti-LGBTQ neighbor lit up the block. With Pride festivals around the nation canceled or postponed, LGBTQ Nation has brought the celebration to us with their new series, Flashes of Pride. They took a look back at some of our community's finest moments from the past few years as a reminder that no matter what life throws our way, queer people will fight our way through it and dance when we hit the other side. In 2016, a woman shared her brilliant clapback to an anti-LGBTQ neighbor on Reddit. The neighbor felt compelled to share her views with her. The Reddit post blew up, and her revenge has become a common technique to push back against homophobia and transphobia. With a few twinkling lights, she didn't just send a message to her neighbors. She lit the imagination of activists nationwide. She wrapped her front porch in 10,000 rainbow-colored Christmas lights. Her neighbor had learned that they were Mormon from her church. "We're no longer Mormon. This is the issue why I left," she came bouncing over, and when my husband told her we no longer attend, she didn't really get the message. She also must have missed the HRC sticker on my car, the Human Rights Campaign. The woman, who did not identify in what part of the country she lives, wrote that her neighbor then proceeded to tell us how horrified she was when her son got turned down from prom because the girl was already planning on going with her girlfriend. That, coupled with the school's justifications for letting lesbians attend the prom together and doing an assembly that taught kids the facts about being transgender, were just too much for her. She said that she had to move them away because she was so sick of the gays and transgenders and everyone making their lifestyle okay. I know that I'm not going to change her opinion, no matter what I say. Having moved her kids to escape the gays, I'm sure me telling her my opinion on it won't make a difference. But at least it makes her feel better. From Advocate.com, Friday, May 22nd, 2020, reported by Trudy Ring. NYC Fire Department gets first lesbian battalion chief. Captain Michelle Fitzsimmons has made history as the second woman and the first lesbian to become a battalion chief in the New York City Fire Department. Fitzsimmons, a 19-year veteran of the department, was promoted in a ceremony at the city's fire academy. The event followed social distancing rules, so Fitzsimmons wore a surgical mask, and no friends or family members were admitted. The FDNY's first female battalion chief was Rochelle Rocky Jones, who was promoted to the post in 2003 and retired in 2011. Jones was married to a male firefighter, John Thomas. As a battalion chief, Fitzsimmons will oversee several FDNY ladder and engine companies. The granddaughter and great-granddaughter of New York firefighters, she joined the department in 2001, having been the only woman in her graduating class at the academy. A few years later, her sister became a city firefighter as well. "I was able to prove that I was capable of doing the job, which went a long way when it came to being accepted," Fitzsimmons said of her career. "There was always a reaction when someone had to work with a woman, but now there are a lot more women, so that doesn't happen anymore. It used to be a big thing," she added. "I would be stopped on the street by people who said they had never seen a lady firefighter before." Before her promotion, Fitzsimmons was commander of the Ladder 12 Company in the Chelsea neighborhood. She's a past president of Fireflag, the FDNY's LGBTQ plus organization, and worked at the HIV service organization GMHC for 8 years, the last three as coordinator of its Lesbian AIDS project before joining the fire department. Captain Michelle Fitzsimmons is also the co-founder of Phoenix Fire Camp, which introduces teenage girls to careers in firefighting. Fitzsimmons said her predecessor, Jones, laid out some great tracks for me to follow and for me to have this opportunity. Her own promotion, she added, shows that if you put your mind to something and work really hard and put the time in, you can achieve anything. And the department has supported me and enabled me to achieve that. FDNY Commissioner Daniel Negro praised Fitzsimmons, issuing the following statement. "Michelle is an accomplished person, an outstanding fire officer, and a role model for so many women and men in the department." From them.us, Thursday, May 21st, 2020, reported by Michelle Kim. God's Own Country director says U.S. distributor cut film's gay sex scenes. Here they go again. Francis Lee, The writer and director of the 2017 queer romance film God's Own Country has claimed that its U.S. distributor butchered the movie by removing its gay sex scenes. The British director took to Twitter to call attention to the fact that the version of the film that was available to stream on Amazon's Prime Video appeared to be censored. The scenes that had gone absent included an outdoor wrestling sex scene and another sex scene in a horse auctioneer's trailer, according to Vulture. Until this is investigated, please do not rent or buy on Amazon Prime, he warned. It is not the film I intended or made. He clarified in follow-up tweets that the culprit was not Amazon, but rather the U.S. distributor Samuel Goldwyn Films, who allegedly censored the film without consultation to get more revenue. He then clarified that the streaming version of the film had been taken down from Amazon Prime Video, but it was still available to rent or buy from the platform. In an additional posting on Twitter, director Francis Lee added that the version posted on Netflix is perfect. A spokesperson for Amazon told Vulture that God's Own Country might have been flagged for graphic content and received an MA rating by Amazon's algorithm because it was uploaded via Amazon's Prime Video Direct service, which allows independent filmmakers and distributors to upload their own films. A distributor, like Samuel Goldwyn Films in this instance, could then re-edit a film and resubmit it for a different rating, if they so choose, without Amazon's involvement or input, Vulture reports. Them.us has reached out to representatives for Samuel Goldwyn Films for further comment. And that's The Honest Tea. Vicky Marlane, who died in 2011 at the age of 76 due to AIDS complications, was one of a kind, and her friendship, enthusiasm, honesty, and loyalty have earned her a place forever in our hearts. Steve Pride sat down with her shortly before her passing.
At the age of 78, Vicky Marlane still performs nightly at Aunt Charlie's Lounge in the Tenderloin district of San Francisco, arguably making her America's oldest working drag entertainer. Her journey from Minnesota farm boy to carnival worker to drag diva to grand marshal of the San Francisco Gay Pride Parade in 2003 is a lesson in perseverance that began in a very different time and place.
My cousin and I, we used to be the same size and everything, so I used to go over to her house and borrow some of her dresses. And we'd go to the, every Sunday, go to the roller skating rink. And I'd be dressed in drag going roller skating. Well, one day this one girl from school says to me, she says, "I know you, you're Donnie. I'm going to go to school and tell everybody." Well, the next day, I took her behind the tree and I says, "You tell anybody what you saw Sunday, I'll beat the crap out of you." Well, she never told anybody. I guess she was scared.
How'd you end up on stage?
I was 16 years old when I first did it. It was a bar in St. Paul, Minnesota. It was a gay bar. I used to go in there and just drink, underage, of course. And they had entertainment there. And I says, well, I can do this. So I went to my mother's attic and took a pair of gold damask drapes, made a strip outfit out of it, and went to the bar and says, can I perform? It was amateur night. And they said, sure. Well, they hired me. Well, I told my mother, and I was working there, but I didn't tell her what I was doing there. So one night I'm on stage stripping, 17 years old. I look in the audience, and there's my mother sitting there in the audience. Well, needless to say, I was a little shocked. But she came upstairs to the dressing room, and she told me, if this is what you want to do, just be good at it. I remember those words, because years and years later, when she was a brain tumor and everything, she didn't even want to speak to me. And I left the home crying, because she wanted nothing to do with me.
That was 1949. A dangerous time for gender self-expression?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. You couldn't go in drag on the streets. If you did, you'd better be wearing at least 3 articles of men's clothing underneath. I was arrested quite a few times. They would arrest you because of female impersonation. And I used to tell them, well, what female am I impersonating? Who? What female am I impersonating? I'm me. So they used to always put a prostitution charge onto it. I think I got about 10 prostitution charges. Well, I'd be wealthy by now if I was a prostitute that long. But I was in jail quite a few times, I'll put it that way.
It must have felt like you were in a sideshow. But later, you were in a sideshow. You joined a carnival.
Oh, that was something else. A lot of places wouldn't allow us in the hotels and everything because we're show folk. So we had to sleep in the tents and everything. And if a rainstorm came on, we all run out and hold the guy ropes down to hold the tent down, because if that tent went down, there was our job. But it was fun. It was like a nightclub in a tent. I put it that way quite a few times. A nightclub in a tent.
What sort of things did you do in the carnival?
Strip naked.
You were also the alligator girl.
Yes. I would take a dry glue paste, mix it, smear it all over my body, then stand perfectly still for about half an hour until it dried, and then move all the skin and everything so it all cracked and looked like it was skin peeling and cracking and everything. Take food coloring, put it in my eyes, and I was the alligator skin girl.
What other jobs did you do?
I was the third and fourth legs, or the lady with four legs. Oh. Yes, it was a chair that was built so I could get underneath the chair, and they could put a cushion underneath and have the fat woman sit on top of that and have her legs sticking out and have my legs in between her legs. So it looked like it was another pair of legs growing out of this woman. And they could touch my legs, and I'd pull it back and everything so they could see that it was real human legs.
Any jobs outside of entertainment?
Oh, Lord, I was a house painter for a while in San Diego. I did a lot of house painting because I was trying to go straight.
It's interesting that you do painting as well as stripping because they go together. Tell me about some of the clubs you've worked in over the years.
Oh, Lordy. Most of them aren't even around anymore. The most fabulous club I worked in was the Talk of the Town in Chicago. Crystal chandeliers. It was nothing but tables and chairs, a huge, huge stage. We had a lot of celebrities come in there all the time. Yeah, in Detroit, Ethel Merman and the original cast of Gypsy came in to see our show. And when we were done with our version of Gypsy, their cast stood up and gave us a standing ovation. And then Ethel Merman got on top of the piano bar and sang, "There's no business like show business." I'll take that to my grave. It was utterly fantastic.
But most of the clubs weren't that fabulous.
Most of them were little dingy bars, I'll put it that way. Nothing fancy. Like I said, the best one was the Talk of the Town. The Club Chesterfield was a dump. The Nightlife was a dump. And Charlie's is a dump. But I love it. I've been there almost 13 years. Well, it's a small, small, small bar. We can seat 50 people. And we can have 10 standing. So 60 people is our limit in the bar. So it's not a big bar.
And you're still performing there?
Yes, I love it.
No plans to retire?
When I'm ashes.
Well, that would hurt the act, yeah.
Yeah.
You're pushing 80. You've had a colorful, amazing life. Tell me something you've learned.
Don't be afraid because you're young and gay. Get out and do what you want to do, as long as you don't hurt anybody. I mean, I've had a lot of experiences in my life, and it's no different than other people. I had my loves, I had my losses, I had my heartaches. I've lost my family because of my way of life, but I'm still human.
You mentioned love. Tell me about your greatest love.
I don't know if I can talk about him.
Okay, that's fine. Let's talk about something else. Your signature number at Aunt Charlie's is Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart. What is it about that particular song that speaks to you?
I love it so much because it's me. It's that part of it is I'm falling apart, and love is tonight, and we got to grab it tonight, or tonight's forever. And, you know, I ain't got forever. The words are so truthful and honest. Like when I, towards the end of the number, because I'm falling apart and everything, I'm taking my clothes off, I stripped down to a bra and G-string with just the duster on because I fall apart. And that's how I end the song.
Any regrets? Any forks in the road? You think, well, maybe I could have gone left instead of right there.
Oh, yes, a lot of regrets. A lot of regrets. But I believe in life.
This has been a conversation with Miss Vicky Marlane. Aunt Charlie's Lounge is located at 133 Turk Street in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
And there's nothing I can do, a total eclipse of the heart. A total eclipse of the heart. A total eclipse of the heart.
When Vicky Marlane passed away in 2011, Turk Street, outside of Aunt Charlie's in San Francisco, was renamed in her honor. Moe B. Dick is cited as one of the founding fathers of the modern-day drag king movement. Michelle Gilkison reports.
My name is Moe Fisher. I go by drag king Moe B. Dick, spelled Moe B. period D-I-C-K.
How did you get started in drag?
The summer of 95, I spent in Provincetown, Massachusetts, and I'd met a couple drag kings there. They were performing there all summer, Julie Wheeler and someone who went by the name Buster Hyman. Buster Hyman did this amazing Jim Morrison impression, and it was really interesting, and it was a lot of fun. I was really impressed by it, but I thought, I had some stereotypes about it. I thought, well, you have to be butch, you have to be a lesbian, you have to be certain things in order to be a drag king. So I thought, I could never do that. I then got this ticket on Amtrak that was unlimited stopping all around America. It was only $300. It was cool. And when I got to San Francisco, a friend of mine had saved an article that was in the San Francisco Weekly, and it was about the local drag king scene there. They had featured someone who didn't fit the stereotype, bisexual, married to a man, secretary by day, and drag king by night. And the transformation was astounding. I expanded my thinking, and when I got back to New York, well, let me try this. I did a lot of research going back into history and looking at who were the pioneers who donned a suit and a mustache. And, you know, some of it was for survival and, as we know, lesbian history. Some of it was for performance sake. I hope the baby dykes of today know their history.
One thing that I love about drag are all of the endless possibilities when it comes to character. Moby Dick is this crass, super macho guy. How did you develop his persona?
I just got my hair cut and I wore my hair short anyhow. I had my hair clippings, went over to a drag queen's friend's house, Mistress Formica, who hailed New York, was this amazing, amazing drag queen. All he had was eyelash glue. So we put some on, made some facial hair, very baggy jeans to minimize my girly figure, a ski cap on. And I had just purchased from a thrift shop a bowling shirt that said Dick on it. It was just the natural extension, pardon the pun, of Moby Dick. I went out to a local lesbian bar called Meow Mix, had a ball. My friends couldn't recognize me. They were like, what? That's not Mo. No way. Through the help of Mistress Formica, I was trying out different personas. Tried on kind of the East Village grunge guy, kind of hipster, and that didn't work. And just different sailor, you know what I mean? So it was rough trade. And it was the gay, lesbian, bi, trans film festival called Mix. I was asked to perform. So I created this monologue, really heinous guy, just a schmuck of a guy, a dick. Through the monologue, I was feigning sickness and I transformed myself into a human fly. And then I lip synced to the song by Cramps called Human Fly. So the subtext of that, men like that are pests. It was a very easy, comfortable character for me. And I thought, this is who my inner man is here. You know, and my motto was, instead of being an angry woman, I became a funny man.
Talk some more about the relationship between everyday anger and Moe's character. What are some of the issues you see yourself addressing in your performance?
More feminist things, the right and privilege of being a woman on the street and feeling safe. That was one of the things that made me most angry in New York City, because walking around there, you're target as a woman. When I was in drag, I thought, oh my God, I'm not getting accosted, verbally accosted. In fact, what happened was men would be like, hey, how you doing? I went, whoa, wait, there's this whole international men's club I don't know anything about. So addressing the issues, just taking up space in the subway where men would keep their legs open, and anatomically I can understand, but if a woman wants to sit down, you got to move their legs in order to sit down. And just a different sense of entitlement. Putting that on stage, it gave me freedom and permission to express myself in whatever way I wanted. I was an aggressive child, and being an aggressive female child is frowned upon. Then as an aggressive woman, how do you navigate those waters? You're called a bitch. Oh, she's a dyke. Why can't a woman be aggressive? Addressing those issues in a comedic way. John Waters had called me a sexual terrorist in a funny way, but he did so because I would get straight women, gay women, bi men, and straight men and gay men, which was a huge fan base, just confused and looking and, you know, having that desire, yet not quite sure what that meant. And that was actually the most fun.
I want to hear more about your gay male fan base.
Oh, God, that was so funny. I remember going to Squeeze Box, which was this really, really fun rock and roll party that was happening in Tribeca, where Mistress Formica had performed and reigned as the premier rock and roll drag queen. And being cruised by a gay man is like nothing you will ever experience. The laser eyes, where you can just feel the burning sensation go up and down your body. That was really fun. I remember standing there going, oh my God, I'd be cruised by so many gay men right now. And my friend Mario saying, just be cool, just be cool. I remember too, very clearly being in the subway in New York, and this man was cruising me, and I had a stack of flyers for my party. And so I handed him a flyer, then got off the subway and turned around, and the look on his face, he looks at the flyer and then looks out the window, and he just was astonished. I fooled him.
Tell us about Club Casanova.
The first actually internationally known weekly drag king party that was in East Village, New York City from 96 to 97. And it only lasted 2 years because at that time, Mayor Giuliani was instrumental in closing a lot of clubs and bars, targeting people for dancing. I mean, something really ludicrous, just white washing all of New York City. Woke up in the middle of the night and said, Club Casanova, that's the name. I got it together. You walked in, there was a drag king at the door collecting money. There were drag king go-go dancers. There was a drag king DJ and a drag king show. It wasn't a hit at first. We went through different venues trying to find the right fit. It lasted at Cake. That was the third place that we went to, and it was a total hit there and garnered a lot of international attention. Because being New York City, people always come in and they want to see what's the latest. It was actually a dump of a bar in East Village. It would make me laugh because I thought, oh my God, people are coming here from Australia, from Austria, from Japan, from Germany. I mean, from all over the world. They're looking around going, what? Because it was such a dump of a bar, but they got this whole drag king experience and were blown away. It was pretty exciting at that time.
And what happened next?
I took the show on the road in spring of 98, and that was the first ever drag king tour of US and Canada. People were intrigued. They'd never even heard or thought about anything like this. Then the next tour we did was 2001, and that was amazing seeing the progression of the drag king scene, because 98 was the advent of the drag king book. With all of that came burgeoning of drag king communities and scenes around the world. 2001, 9/11 had happened. We left New York City a week to the day after it. I was really struggling with, gosh, should we do this tour? And, you know, I had a resounding yes from all across the country. We need your laughter. We need to know New York's okay. Oh, I get chills when I talk about it. So I think doing drag is political by nature. When we traveled, we were talking about, on behalf of the men of Club Casanova, we do not support the war. So we said, no blood for oil. We had that sign on our van throughout the entire tour. And when we got to Arizona, we performed firstly in Tucson, and then we moved on to Phoenix the next night. The owner of the clubs, she called me on the way after the Tucson show and said, I don't want you to mention anything about your political stance and about the war. I would shocked. Are you actually censoring me? Screw that. I'm going to speak my mind. And so I did it in a roundabout way. I think I made reference to Bush being pubic hair in a funny way. We're not for Bush. I'm not saying you have to shave, but you know, it was just kind of pandered to that. And the next tour, we were not invited back. I didn't care. To me, I thought that was a really important thing to do.
You said that drag is political by nature. How so?
what's political to someone is someone else's daily life. For someone who is butch, is it political for them to dress in a suit every day? Maybe not. That's who they are. But for me, being femme, to put on a suit, that's political. It makes people question their preconceived notions of gender, of what is fixed and what is not. It becomes confusing for people. Is it easy for them to answer those questions? I don't think so. And I think that's good.
For IMRU Radio, this is Michelle Marie Gilkison.
George Takei, More Than a Star, coming up now on The Rainbow Minute. On the TV series Star Trek, helmsman Mr. Sulu was played by George Takei. But he's become more than just a star. There's an asteroid named in his honor. In October of 2007, the asteroid formerly known as 1994 GT9 was renamed 7307 Takei. It was discovered by two Japanese astronomers in 1994, located between Mars and Jupiter. When Takei heard the news, he said, quote, "I was blown away. It came out of the clear blue sky, just like an asteroid." The name was approved by the International Astronomical Union's Committee on Small Body Nomenclature. Tom Burbine, an astronomy professor, suggested the name out of appreciation for Takei's work with the Japanese American Citizens League and as a spokesman for the Human Rights Campaign's Coming Out Project. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Jeff Schultes.
Hello, I'm Pandora Box, and you are listening to IMRU Radio Magazine.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Drag Queen Story Hour is just what it sounds like. Drag queens reading stories to children in libraries, schools, and bookstores. It captures the imagination and celebrates the gender fluidity of childhood, and gives kids glamorous, positive, and unabashedly queer role models. Abby Dees and Wenzel Jones report.
Hi, everyone. We are so excited to all make it to Drag Queen Story Hour. Our fabulous queen today, the legendary Miss Barbecue.
Oh my goodness. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
You guys ready to hear some stories?
Yay.
Yes. We have some beautiful, beautiful stories here today. Not all princesses wear pink. Mary had a little glam.
Okay, I like that one.
And then we're gonna have a choice. We either can do neither.
Neither.
Or it's okay to be different.
Okay, neither.
Some princesses roll around wrestling on the muddy ground, then get right up to skip and dance in tattered, stained, and muddy pants.
What? And dogs?
I know. And a sparkly car.
And sparkly car.
Who likes pumpkins?
Pumpkins are cool. My name is Pickle. I'm the LA organizer for Drag Queen Story Hour.
Some princesses like to pedal wearing lots of shiny metal.
Drag Queen Story Hour is actually available in all LA public libraries. We're in the special programming list, so libraries can request. Eagle Rock is our first LA public library that we have done more than two or three, and it's definitely like we're more regular here. But we are available at all the LA public libraries. We go to Watts. Yesterday we were in the West Valley. So like it's all around, but we have a very special home here at Eagle Rock, and it's a lot of fun.
Exactly. Fit in just right. Excuse us, we're from the land of this and that.
My name is Caitlin Quinn. I am the children's librarian here at the Eagle Rock Library.
Why do you think this was a good fit for your library?
Eagle Rock is a place where there's quite a large queer community. So for one, I think that families appreciate seeing their culture here performed and celebrated.
Yeah, one of the reasons I love bringing the program to Eagle Rock is because the community is so vibrant and the turnout is always really high, and it's a diverse group of people that come that are just ready for the program, and the community is so appreciative of it, and that kind of support I think really helps the program do what it's supposed to do, which is promote reading, and it's a literacy program.
Once upon a time, there were two kinds, this and that, these and those, one or the other. But I'm different from everyone here. I'm neither red, nor orange, nor yellow, nor blue. Exactly.
The stories are also about inclusion, which is not the norm with most story hours. How do you find all of these books?
I look out for these books, and more are coming out all the time. Books that celebrate not only LGBTQ families, but gender inclusivity, fashion as play, diversity, being different. It's a wonderful time for children's literature. I can hardly keep up with all of the titles that just keep coming out. We keep an ongoing list. Please grab one before you leave.
What are the kinds of things that you're hearing when people leave here?
Thank you. We love you.
I was born and raised in LA, so it's my favorite city in the world, and it's so amazing to see that it has such a special home for this kind of programming, which again is a literacy program, and the books that we do read are very much about inclusion and celebrating who you are. And as I always say, the core values of being a drag queen, love, acceptance, self-expression, are values that we want to instill in our kids. So, you know, our agenda is more reading, more love, more sparkle.
All are welcome.
Have you gotten any sort of pushback?
We get pushback from the same people that push back on Harry Potter because it's about witches. I'm just going to be honest about that. There are, of course, always going to be resistance to programming like this, but as far as our branch goes, I wouldn't say that it's anything worth commenting on.
This is the land of all, and everyone fits here.
My name is Monica Valencia. I'm with the Los Angeles Public Library. I work in the PR department, so I'm a spokesperson. You know, today was a wonderful event with parents and children celebrating diversity and acceptance. It was a lot of fun. It was a story time. And here at the LA Public Library, we welcome everyone. And we welcome the parents who bring their children here and their decision to decide on what programs they want for their kids too. It is one of the many programs that we have here at the LA Public Library that reflects the diversity of our communities.
Barbecue.
Hi, cutie.
What's your name?
Get a photo?
What's your name?
Nice to meet you.
Hi, I'm Miss Barbecue, aka MJ Brown.
Okay, why are you doing this?
The first thing that comes to mind for me is visibility. How can we be more visible? And how do we promote more acceptance? And I think it does start with the children. The more we talk to kids about differences and coming from different backgrounds and being proud of who we are, the more that will trickle into how they operate throughout their lives.
When I think of brand barbecue, I do not think of children.
You know?
How did you make that leap?
I was talking to Joe earlier and he said, not all queens are cut out for this. Not all queens are able to sit down, read to children, engage with parents. You know, they're used to the club scene and stuff. So there is a certain finesse that we have to do. And I've worked with children before. I was a recreation leader for 4 years in college. So it was fun to come back and see and talk to kids. Because kids are blunt. If they like something, they'll like it. If they don't like it, they don't like it.
Is there anything different, or is this just basically an extension of anything else you do?
It is theatrical, but I think there's a certain aspect to it when it comes to children and what really seeps into their consciousness, which is different from other places because you are dealing with young minds and being able to engage with them immediately when it happens. As soon as they say, well, they can't have two dads, and then we sit down and discuss why right then and there. So it's not just glossed over. And some of the books I resonate with more, and some of them I'm like, oh, I don't know about this one. But books with a message, I never came across children's books that have such strong messages with them. You know, usually it was about, here's a pig, here's a farm, here's a cow. This one's like going deeper into it, but still making it entertaining and engaging the parents as well. Because I don't think it's all about the children. I think it's about the parents, too.
So you look in this room, and there are a lot of, obviously, queer parents or queer-positive families. But, of course, there are other families around, too, that could really benefit from that. Are you meeting those families?
It's interesting, because when I walked out and they announced me, I saw a couple of guys and women in the room who were like, uh-oh. And automatically my defense goes up and I go, you know what? They're here, which means they're open. And they're here, let me try to reach them. So when I'm out there, underneath my tone, I try to have, it's okay. Your children are safe. It's okay. Learn something different. It's okay. We're here with you.
Why did I feel like Mary Had a Little Glam was written by you?
I love that book. I love Mary Had a Little Glam. Wasn't that great? I came across that one and I was like, I must read this book. I have to read this book. I will read this book to the children.
And how are the kids responding? Like, who are they as an audience?
It's interesting to see how kids warm up to you and how some of them, this is their first exposure. First exposure to maybe a person of color, first exposure to a drag queen, first exposure to being in a room full of kids. I mean, you add those layers to that, and sometimes it can be overwhelming. So I try to smile more. I try not to just go for a kid and grab them. Come here, kid, come here. Like, you have to kind of go, here we go, I'm not gonna bite. And I noticed parents like to show the glitter stuff. That usually brings the girls in, and little boys too. I've had little boys run up and go, I want that ring. I'm like, I bet you do, kid.
All right, we're gonna close out with this one, okay? It's okay to be different. It's okay to have big ears. It's okay to have wheels. Yes, it is. It's okay to be small, medium, large, or extra large. That's right. It's okay to wear glasses. Yeah.
That was really big.
It's okay to come in last. Because you finished it. It's okay to dance by yourself.
What?
Yeah, you can.
Why is that?
I dance by myself all the time.
Why?
It's okay to be proud of yourself.
What?
Who's proud of themselves?
Me.
Yeah, everyone's hand should be up. Everyone's hand up. Everyone's proud of themselves. Yes. It's okay to do something nice for someone. Absolutely, like helping me with my book. Thank you.
People want to find out about it, where do they go?
You can go to the website dragqueenstoryhour.org. You can email la@dragqueenstoryhour.org, or I would really encourage people to go to their local library and see what's up and ask about it.
Librarians rock.
You are special and important just because of being who you are. The end. Amazing people, and I miss barbecue.
Don't go away. We'll be right back with memories of drag cons past.
Vidal's groundbreaking novel, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. In 1948, a young Gore Vidal published his third novel, The City and the Pillar. Intending to depict homosexuality as a fact of life, and an entirely natural one at that, Vidal was unprepared for the immense backlash from puritanical critics who labeled the book immoral. Orville Prescott, the influential critic of the New York Times, effectively blacklisted Vidal from the Times literary pages, forcing Vidal to temporarily abandon novel writing for Hollywood. By today's standards, The City and the Pillar is tame, but in 1948, the portrayal of two attractive, all-American boys in love and in lust with one another was enough to temporarily derail the career of a promising writer and reveal the bone-deep prejudices of the American literary mainstream. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Steve Bush.
Yes, it's true. You could have more friends, a better job, more money, and enjoy the kind of life you've always dreamed about. Homosexuals in America are better educated, travel more, and enjoy a higher standard of living than their straight counterparts. If you've ever sat alone watching television on a Saturday night or felt like your life was going nowhere, maybe homosexuality is right for you.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho, and you're listening to I Am, Are You? On KPFK 90.7 FM.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Taylor Gray. DragCon, which started in Los Angeles, has expanded with versions in New York City and the UK, but this year the whole thing became virtual, so we combined a few moments from DragCon's past.
Now we're gonna
cut the ribbon any second now. I just want to say to everyone, this is our third year, and this is our biggest year so far. And it's all because of you and because of these beautiful, gorgeous creatures behind me. Give them a big round of applause. You guys have made this drag race phenomenon such a beautiful ride for all of us. Thank you for coming to the third annual RuPaul's Drag Con Los Angeles.
I'm Steve Prine.
And I'm Wenzel Jones, reporting from the exhibition floor of the Los Angeles Convention Center
and RuPaul's Drag Con 2017.
Tell our listeners who you are and why you're here.
Hey, I'm Jeffrey Boyer Chapman. I am here at DragCon today because I was lucky enough to be invited back after living the best day of my psychological life as a guest judge on Drag Race this season. Could you hear that? That applause wasn't for me, but I was a guest judge on Drag Race season 9, and it was so phenomenal. And Rue and Michelle and Ross and the World of Wonder have been treating me with a lot of love and invited me back. So,
what was the best thing about judging Drag Race?
Getting a behind-the-scenes experience, being a super fan myself. I watch the show obsessively. It is like constantly on a loop in my home, constantly on a loop in my trailer at work. Working on a show like Unreal, where we are producing and manipulating behind-the-scenes of a reality competition program, it was very interesting to see how it's actually done. And these girls have a lot of talent and so much that isn't seen in the final edit, so it was my wet dream getting a behind-the-scenes peek.
Tell me who you are and why you're here.
I'm Coco Peru, and I'm here because it's an opportunity to meet fans who are coming from all over the country where I wouldn't get to meet them normally. So for me, it's just amazing to have people that will actually stand on a line and want to give me a hug and tell me how much they love me. It's a treat for me, really.
Is it awkward to be a lady like you in a room full of drag queens?
Not at all. I feel right at home with my drag sisters. This lighting could be better, I'll be honest, but what are you going to do?
I'm Zachary Drucker. I'm a producer on Transparent, and I'm an artist and a filmmaker, and I'm here at DragCon. I just did a panel with Alexis DeLago, the Grande Dame of New York demimonde from 1950s through to today. She's been kind of an incredible archetype and legend for all gender non-binary and gender experimental folks. So we did a panel with James St. James, which was incredible, and I love being at DragCon. I think that it's such an incredible confluence of gender freedom. People from all walks of life coming to just kind of express themselves and to be around kindred spirits.
Tell our listeners who you are and why you're here.
I have no idea. No, I'm Frank DiCaro, and I am at DragCon for the third year in a row, partly because I adore drag and partly because I'm working on a book on drag, so that's why I'm here. But it's mostly out of love for drag.
Tell me who you are, this random stranger who's walking around stalking Mr. DiCaro.
I am stalking Mr. DiCaro, but, you know, I only stalk the best. My husband, Frank DiCaro. I'm Jim Colucci, and I'm an author and TV writer, and I love it because we're such fans of Drag Race and of drag in general, and I'm not a big reality show person. I'm a sitcom person. I love scripted TV. But when you can see a reality show that has so much heart in it and then see it come to life, where you get to see everybody here in one room, it's amazing. So, as both fans of drag, and also last year I did a panel about my book, Golden Girls Forever, and I learned, you know, you show up at DragCon wearing a Betty White t-shirt, and these are your people. So this is amazing. It's like between loving drag and loving DragCon, and then knowing that I'm in a room full of people who love what I love, like the Golden Girls, it's great. And tons of people are stopping me about my shirt, but then I've seen a lot of other Golden Girls shirts going on around here.
Bea Arthur appeared at one of the most legendary nights of drag in 1994. She was on a bill with Charles Pierce, Charles Bush, Milton Berle in drag, and Bea Arthur, and it kind of worked. And so I think she was a drag queen, and her penis was just bigger than the rest. That's all.
If you just tuned in, I'm Steve Pride.
And I'm Wenzel Jones at RuPaul's Drag Con.
My name is Angina, and I'm here because I am an alumni for RuPaul's Drag Race Season 1. I probably am most memorable from my season because I came out as HIV positive during my season.
And what did the show do for you?
The show not only helped me throughout my career, but it helped me really elevate my drag persona and really look at drag in a different way, and really just made me become a better person and a better creative person.
Has the show itself changed drag in the U.S.?
Absolutely. Now that the show is definitely in the forefront of our culture, it has an effect into how people do their drag, what they want to do, and things like that. And I think that that's a really great thing now that the show is reaching a catapult of people, like, crazier than I ever thought it would.
I mean, I have a few friends that are drag queens. They don't quite fit the mold of Drag Race, and they complain about it. Do they have a legitimate concern?
I don't think that there is really a mold for to be on the show. I think that what Ru is looking for is definitely showgirls and entertainers. And I think every person who wants to send in a videotape for an audition should definitely do it, because you'll never know what response you're going to get.
I am Michelle Visage. I am everything LGBT, positivity, love, light, and happiness, and of course RuPaul's Drag Race.
But you're not a drag queen.
I am a drag queen.
What's the best thing about DragCon?
People coming together for the same purpose. Everybody loving the show, but that's not really the purpose. The purpose is celebrating the art of drag in the name of love and everybody getting along. We're under this huge space with all the queerest people and weirdest people in the world, a conglomerate of love and art and craziness just coming together.
Tell me about your kids, because you have a gay daughter, and I think you must be the coolest mom to have.
I mean, I have a queer daughter. She doesn't identify as anything, non-binary and not gay or straight. She's 17 and she wants to try everything, and I think it's amazing. And she doesn't necessarily like when I talk about it, but I think she knows that I'm here and yeah, the best mother to have, because I'm going to raise that P flag with like lots of love and support, and that's really important. And it's the one thing that I wish every queer kid in the world could have.
What's the biggest surprise about this event?
The amount of heterosexual couples that have come over, and they're, as it's grown, you see a lot more straight men going, I watch Drag Race because of you, and it's like, yeah, you watch Drag Race because of my tits. But, you know, the fact that there's love in the family, yeah, and that they watch together is beautiful. That's kind of new to me. It's great.
Hi, I'm Fenton Bailey. I'm one of the co-founders of World of Wonder, and we produce DragCon.
How's it going this third year?
This third year is the most amazing year yet. I mean, we've had a phenomenal explosion of interest, so it's really exciting. I think we're gonna have to like figure out something for next year. We need more room. We need a bigger hall.
And what's the big surprise this year?
Well, I think there's a few things that have been really new and kind of surprising. One is I feel that as a result of the election, we have a much more engaged audience, and they realize, I think, that drag is fun and entertaining, yes, and it's also political. Because by standing up for your individuality and your freedom to be who you are and to be authentic, these are all things that the current administration is against. You know, they want to build walls, they want to close minds, close hearts, and of course, DragCon is the exact opposite. So I feel this enormous groundswell, really, of people being engaged and wanting to make a difference and recognizing that the freedom we have is really precious and should be as fiercely and fabulously defended as our outfits. So I feel that's a big difference. And we've catered to that. We have the ACLU are here. We have a number of nonprofits. The Resistance March are here. And Teen Vogue did a panel on what drag means in the age of Trump. So people are just more, you know, I don't know quite what it means, woke, you know, as the kids say. People are more woke. And I think that's also drawing people here, you know, because this is a safe space. This is where you can be yourself. This is where you're not going to be judged or harassed or assaulted. You're going to be celebrated. You know, here's the thing. Randy and I would, you know, cut from film school, from editing class,
yeah,
and we'd go to the Pyramid for happy hour, and we'd see these amazing drag shows. And we always felt drag is an art form that really deserves a wider audience, or like, just anybody can enjoy this. It's not about being gay, or it's not even necessarily about men dressing up as women. It is a sort of celebration and a parody of all the madness of popular culture. And it's a true art form. And I feel that people now are beginning to feel they have permission to take this medium seriously and to enjoy it. And I think that's very satisfying, because that's the way it should be. Life is better with drag. You know, the way to make America great again is drag queens.
You know, someone somewhere can write a thesis for college on the, not the fact that there is a drag con, but that it has a children's area.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I have kids. Randy, my partner at World of Wonder, he has kids too. And last year we noticed so many families coming, you know, teenagers and kids dragging their parents to DragCon. And it just made sense to, like, let's have a bouncy house. We have drag queen story hour, which is great. I was just over there with Acid Betty doing story hour. I mean, isn't that great?
Well, I am RU. I'm Steve Pride.
And I'm Wendell Jones at RuPaul's DragCon 2017. Thanks for joining us, but it's time to fold the frock, put the wig back on the stand, and sashay away until next year. RuPaul's Drag Race. Gentlemen, on your engine. RuPaul's Drag Race. You're the best woman. Best woman
wins. DragCon 2020 can still be streamed on YouTube. And although it's online, there's not a sloppy tuck in sight. Well, that's the end of our show. But before we sashay away, we'd like to thank IMRU's executive producer Steve Pride and Rainbow Minute producers Judd Proctor and Brian Burns. Find us online at imruradio.org and follow us on Facebook at IMRU Radio. You can also listen to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Breaker, Radio Public, Stitcher, Anchor.fm, CastBox, and Pocket Casts. We close with a song from Todrick Hall about the global pandemic. Good night, and stay well.
Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs, TikTok, Grubhub, Twinks, Jocks, Bears, Cubs, Zoom is the new club. 6 feet, no hugs, still beat these mugs. Sick beat, cut a rug, Joe Exotic is a bug. Kitty cat cat, tell me Carol Baskin, where is the husband? Everyone's asking. Stimulus check, everybody better cash in. Mask and gloves, yeah, that's a new fashion. Girl, what did that girl just say, girl? Girl, I don't go to work. I don't leave, I stay. I don't care, I eat, eat, eat and sleep all day. Okay. And then I watch TV, yep. That's just the tea, hun tea. Yes, but till they set us free, then I'ma let you see.
What you gonna let them see?
My mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs.
Ah! My mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs.
No school, gym closed. Don't touch these clothes. Need food, this blows. Line at Trader Joe's. At home, gym, fish. Don't come close. Just wave, wave, blow a kiss. Mask for mask, sis. Left, right, swiping on Tinder. What was life like? I can't remember. Needing my haircut, somebody shave her. Where is all of the toilet paper? Girl, what did that girl just say, girl? Ooh. Girl, I don't go to work. I don't leave, I stay. I don't care, I eat, eat, eat and sleep all day. Okay. And then I watch TV, yep. That's just the tea, hun tea. Yes, but till they set us free, then I'ma let you see.
What you gonna let them see?
My mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs.
Ah! My mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs.
Okay, dolls, y'all know what time it is. Come on, stay inside and lock the door. Stay inside and lock the door. Now I want you to grab that sponge, grab that broom, get your shout, get your bleach. Cause I know you want to dance, but it's time to clean that dirt. Come on, mop for me, mop for me, mop, mop for me, mop for me, mop, mop for me, mop for me, mop, mop for me, mop for me, mop. Tongue pop for me, pop for me. 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 Now spray for me, spray for me, spray, spray for me, spray for me, spray, spray for me, spray for me, spray, spray for me, spray for me, spray. Stay away from me, away from me, away, away from me, away from me, away. Stay away from me, away from me, away, away from me, away from me, away. Now sweet for me, sweet for me, sweet, sweet for me, sweet for me, sweet, sweet for me, sweet for me, sweet, sweet for me, sweet for me, sweet. Now sleep for me, sleep for me, sleep, sleep for me, sleep for me, sleep, sleep for me, sleep for me, sleep, sleep for me, sleep for me, sleep. Fold clothes for me, clothes for me, clothes, clothes for me, clothes for me, clothes. Fold clothes for me, clothes for me, clothes, clothes for me, clothes for me, clothes. Hit the wall for me, the wall for me, the wall, the wall for me, the wall for me, the wall. Hit the wall for me, the wall for me, the wall, the wall for me, the wall for me, the wall. Now
squirt, squirt for me, squirt for me, 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 squirt. Now twerk for me, twerk for me, twerk, twerk for me, twerk for me, twerk, twerk for me, twerk for me, twerk, twerk for me, twerk for me. Hands on your knees for me, your knees for me, your knees, your knees for me, your knees for me. Hands on your knees for me, your knees for me, your knees, your knees for me, your knees for me, your knees. Febreze for me, Febreze for me, Febreze, Febreze for me, Febreze for me, Febreze, Febreze for me, Febreze for me, Febreze, Febreze for me, Febreze for me, Febreze. That's all.